Hey, sister. Welcome back to the Daily Mantra Podcast. I am your host, Jessie Truelove. You can find me at Move with Truelove on Instagram for all things pre and postnatal fitness and, of course, motherhood. Since you are here, I'd love your 5-star rating of the podcast to help spread the powerful information from experts that I have on this podcast for all the mamas. You are going to love this episode, all about something I feel like most moms have struggled with in one season or another. Mom burnout and resentment in marriage related to the invisible or mental load of motherhood. I talk with Dr. Morgan Cutlip all about triggers, intimacy in marriage, being pursued by your partner, burnout, and so much more. Morgan has a PhD in psychology. She is an author. Her book, Love Your Kids Without Losing Yourself, is available for pre-order now and has worked in the field of relationships for many years. She was also just recently on Good Morning America, which is so exciting and such a big accomplishment, spreading such an important message. She is a beam of light and was so easy to talk to. We go everywhere in this conversation, and she answers community questions that were submitted at the end of the podcast as well. With that said, let's welcome Dr. Morgan Cutlip to the Daily Mantra Show. Okay, welcome back to the Daily Mantra Podcast. Today, we are blessed with the presence of Morgan Cutlip. She is a PhD in psychology. She was just recently on Good Morning America. I mean, hello, that is such a big accomplishment. And I saw that and I've been following you for so long. And I was just like, so proud of you. And so like internally, just like, oh my gosh, this is such a big moment for her. And I feel like I have that more since I've become a mom. Like, you're somebody's baby and you're accomplishing like so many big things. And you're doing such important work. And I'm so honored to have you here today share all your knowledge. Yeah. Morgan, can you just go ahead and introduce yourself a little bit and explain your expertise and kind of your background and what you're doing now? And if anybody doesn't know Morgan Cutlip and is not following your page, you're living under a rock and you need to, you need to access this information, because I feel like it's all of the things we're all feeling but can't put words to. And I feel like you do that so beautifully, and that's why I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you. That was the nicest introduction. I feel like, oh, I just feel so welcome. Thank you so much. Where did I start? So I have been in the field of relationships for over 15 years. My dad actually is a PhD in psychology. We worked together. Our working relationship has changed, but we worked together for probably around 12 years. And I kind of like grew up in the field of relationships. He got his doctorate when I was maybe 5 or 6 is when he went back to school. I'd go to classes with him. I went to conferences with him at a young age. I started speaking. I taught a class on Freud when I was in like first grade or something. Like I did a lecture.
You're incredible. So, your dad must be so proud.
I think it was his experiment a little bit. Like he's just gonna like pull me into it. And so I feel like I've been doing this forever, because it's been just kind of woven into the fabric of my growing up experience. And what my dad did, which is cool, is he was writing courses before it was the thing that everybody and their brother did. He taught live courses. It started with singles and then couples. And then I joined him, ended up getting my own education because I wanted to be able to stand in my own right, you know, with my own credentials and things like that. And so really my skill set is around taking psychological research and theory and concepts and translating them into practical, actionable pieces of advice. So that's really what I do. Many, many years ago, I was in the car with him. We were driving to I think he was teaching a class. And I said, you know, someday I'm going to do something with women. Like, I don't know what, but like, that's going to be my thing. It's like, how do I differentiate from you, Dad?
Yeah.
And I imagined I'd help women choose partners, because we do a lot with singles. And fast forward many, many years, and I had our daughter, Effie. And at this time, I got my doctorate. I have a degree in human development and family science, and I was smacked across the face with how hard motherhood hit me. It felt buried by it. I developed resentment in my relationship, which was totally new to us. Obviously you can develop resentment, but like it was next level.
It's a different thing. It's a different animal. I just got the full chills. It's so easy to give advice and to like be the perfect parent and be the perfect wife before
you are both of those things at the same time. And it's like everybody's perfect until you're thrown into it. And I feel like the best people to take advice from and the best like businesses and all of these things that come from somebody that truly struggled in it. So they have that, I can relate to actually what you're going through. And yeah, I just got the chills when you said that because it is a different level of like, different. And just to hear that you had that too, and you're giving all this, like you have so much advice and practical tips to give, and it is so well received. And it's like, you were there, like you were in the thick of it with us, you know?
I go back into it sometimes. I mean, I think that's part of it. It's just like, you know, I don't know. I just knew. So I knew once I kind of like had that experience in motherhood, I was like, someday I'll come out. Like I knew it would ease up at some point, like the haze kind of dissipates, you know, and you're like, I have a little bit of clear vision. And I was like, someday I'm going to do something to help moms, because if I'm feeling this with all my degrees, right, which like as if that did anything, but for that part of my life. But I was like, if I'm feeling this, I know so many other moms are. Now there's such a wonderful, like, so many platforms for moms to share their experiences. That's like, you know, you're not alone. But when I, you know, Effie's 10. And so back then I at least I wasn't really on social media. I didn't really know. So yeah, I mean, I think that's like a piece of it is, we continue to like get messed up in our message of mine of like, I was buried by motherhood and like, I do much better now and I don't get to that point, but I think there's always moments, whether it's in our closest, like romantic relationships or motherhood or parenting, where we become disconnected. Life kind of like works on our relationships in a way that it continues to pull them apart. And so, I'm not perfect, because like, you can never reach that perfect balanced resting state in any of our relationships. We're constantly having to make little adjustments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like, I feel like perfect is not the goal, you know? Oh, and I feel like it's not the goal, because I don't know. And then also like, even in I always said I found my message in my own mess of postpartum. Mm-hmm. And that was through a physical rehab situation, you know, with my delivery and C-section. And I've been a trainer for so many years and been working with so many moms. And I couldn't put myself in their shoes because I had never been in those shoes. Like, you really just can't until you're there. And, I was like, oh my God, if I can't heal myself, and I've been doing this for so long, went to school for this, got all these extra certifications and all this. And it's like, you have to like be able to be in it and just know. And I think that perspective is a gift that you don't get until much later, maybe the second child. You're like, you're gonna, it does change, you know, it's a season, and seasons will do what they always have done. And that's, they change, you know? And, yeah, it's such a weird thing, because I feel like there's so many more hard times of life and relationship, and it's like that can't really dictate the state of like your relationship. I feel like because it's constantly being pulled on, and you have to have like this knowing of like you're gonna work it out, and having these tips and these tools to like get through those hard times. Because I feel like there's more of those than the easy times, you know? It's like you get these little glimmers of like, oh my gosh, how lucky are we, or how blessed are we? And then it's like right back into the grind of like life. There's so many different facets of it.
You're so spot on. And so my book, the first, I don't call it an intro, because I feel like people skip the intros. This is like, I'm giving away my secret. So I just titled it like it's a chapter, but it's called Balances Baloney, but it talks about exactly what you're saying, which is that like life is going to regularly pull our relationships apart. It's going to mess them up. And I'm talking about any relationship, your relationship with your work. Think about all of the things that just get in the way or imbalance it, or with your partner, with your children. I mean, I know that there are seasons where I'm busier, and so I feel like a little bit more disconnected from my kids. Or even when they first started school, I was like, I don't feel like I know what's going on with you, right? Like all of these, it's the good things, it's the hard things, it's the expected, the unexpected, holidays, job changes, relocations, the birth of children, all of these things interrupt the connection in our relationships. And so when we expect it, then we're not so like self, like judgmental and deprecating when it happens. We're not like, what am I doing wrong? It's like, no, it's part of it. Yeah. And then, you know, we can anticipate it. So what are the tools I need to learn to recalibrate my relationships when they regularly are kind of like, hold on in these normal right. ways.
Right. And then I think that's also like a really great thing just to have somebody like you say, and it's like normal. And I think I just bought your book. I got the hardcover because I know that helps with the numbers or like whatever, you know, there's like, which is so weird. Like if you buy it, it should just be a part of it.
There's like separate. I just got off a call with there's like separate accounting, but the hardcover helps me, but also just want people to read it. So however,
I'm also like we have the Audible and we have all these things, but for me, I'm a highlighter. I'm a highlighter too. So all my books have like all kinds of marks and notes in it. So I'm so excited. I'm so proud of you. It's such a big accomplishment. But I think that hearing the balance is baloney. It's like learning which balls you can drop. You don't have to juggle them all. And if you drop one that's rubber, it's going to bounce. And if you drop one that's paper, it's not going to break. It's like, it's just learning about which ones are the most important. And I think that that's really what I kind of want to have this episode be about. It's like learning about what's not that important so that you don't feel like everything is on you. You know, I feel like, I feel like the first kid, like you just have, like, you're, it's just like all, like you just scrap that. Like what the things that happened in that first year postpartum, like if everybody survived, like that's a success, you know, like there's so much to learn and about each other as a husband and wife, which I feel like is such a weird dynamic to go from like this romantic relationship. That's just your body is your body and it can be sexual and it can be sensual. And then you become like a food source and you're cut in half. And you know, I had a C-section, so I was cut in half, but you could be split in half from the pelvic floor too. So it's like going from all of these different, your body becomes so many different things. And then also, you know, expectations are different. Like I saw one of your reels recently and it was, and I felt this heavy in my first year of postpartum. It was like, my life changed so much. Like I just expect if I want to leave the house, I expect that I have to take the baby. That's just what is expected. If my husband wants to leave the house, he wants to go golfing. He doesn't even think about who's going to watch the baby.
No permission.
That's me. Yeah. No, I'm like, I was literally like, hey, can I go take a shower? Can you go watch the baby while I take a shower? And in that first year, it's so much of like give and take. And, you know, we have almost 5-year-old now and I feel like it's so different. You know, we've really taken these 5 years to really dive deep into who we are and our inner child and all these things. It's like, gosh, your children are so dang triggering. You know, it's like triggering and you just look at them and they're so beautiful and so perfect. And then they start talking to you and you're like, what? Like, and it's like all of these things, they're like, no. And they freak out and they, you know, all these things, like, why does this make you want to crawl out of my skin, you know? Yeah. Or you see your husband parenting your child and you're like, oh my gosh, why is that so triggering for me too? And it's like all these things. But anyways, I'm going on
it's so many. Well, I think I'll just like, speak to like there's so a
all thousand it, whatever you want. Yeah.
That you said that I'm like, well, I've got something to say about all that stuff because there's so many things. I mean, I think one thing you brought up that's really powerful that not a lot of people think about are the expectations that we bring into parenthood and to motherhood and about it all. And I think something that we don't realize is that we're learning how to be parents from the moment that we're being parented. So the moment we're born, we are starting to learn what it means to be a parent ourselves. Here's the thing though, all that stuff lives deep under the surface. So it's almost like planting seeds our whole life, you know, how, whatever our caregivers looked like, whatever our family looked like, whether it's just a mom or just a dad or two moms or two, whatever it looked like, we are creating almost like these templates for what does a caregiver do? What are they like? How do they handle things? How do they show love? Like all of this stuff we are just absorbing and seeds are being planted. So they live within us. So then we grow up, we date, we get, you know, whatever, if we get married, and you're like, whatever, they're still in there. We don't even know that they're in there. Then you have kids. And kids,
I had no idea they were in there. I had no idea.
I didn't know. The majority of people don't know. Okay. The majority of people don't know. And so then you have kids and it is the sunshine and the water that those seeds need to take root and to blossom. And then all of a sudden you're like, wow, you're a disappointment of a, you know, it's like you look at your partner through this completely new lens because all of these expectations rise to the surface. And yes. It's not just towards our partner, it's towards ourselves. So I say, like in my book, I talk about this one statement, which is the type of mom I thought I would be is, and none of us really think about this until we are in it and we're falling short right. of these expectations we have for ourselves. Maybe we have these pictures, like these movie mm-hmm. moments we create in our mind of what kind of moms and yeah. parents we think we'll be, but we don't actually articulate them, put them on the table and examine them to see if they work for us. And so this is one area that I think hits us hard in motherhood and one area that hits our relationships very hard because mm-hmm. We don't talk about them. We don't know they exist. And we only yeah. start to recognize them when we feel like our reality is falling short of them. And then we feel the emotional reaction, mm-hmm. which is,
and we don't know what's happening. We don't know what to do different, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I feel like because our generation like has so much more information and access that we are able, I think, you know, if we're willing to like get out of those cycles a bit easier, it's not easy to get out of the cycle, but to recognize that there is a cycle that needs to be broken. Mm-hmm. And I always say like, my kids have been the biggest mirror into the things that I need to work on in myself. Like anything yes. that is triggering about my kids, I'm like, that is me. That is like something yes. that I have an issue with. Like, I have this weird thing about dishes being in the sink and I had no connection to it. And way back in the day when I was younger, I haven't even like shared this before, but it was like a very triggering situation with my biological mother who I have zero contact with. Mm-hmm. And there was always dirty dishes like with mold and growing mm-hmm. on it. And I was just like, so when I see dirty dishes in my sink, and I had no idea that this was a like an inner child like thing. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I would be so upset at my husband. You know, he would take forever because yeah. husbands, they do the dishes and it just takes them forever. There's dishes everywhere and he's got to have everything soaking for 24 hours. I'm like, just let me do it myself, you know? And so now I do it. But it's like, now I understand like, okay, that's not his fault that I have this triggering situation. It's if I see those dishes in the sink, it doesn't mean I'm a bad mom, even though that's triggering for me because that's how my biological mom chose not to kind of take care of things in the home. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I'm not taking care of my home when mm-hmm. that's happening. And that's just like one example, but
there's a million. It's funny because on social media, there's these like real like discrepant messages about motherhood. And so mm-hmm. there's some that are like, you know, there's a lot of complaining about motherhood actually, which I find really that bugs me. Yeah. I'm always trying to be very careful about how I put, like, you want to be realistic, you want to be toxic positivity, but also it's but here's, sometimes there's this belief that motherhood takes more than it gives. Like our kids are almost like these parasites who are just kind of like sucking the life out of us because mm-hmm. they do in the beginning if you breastfeed, right? Like you're literally
sucking the life out of us.
But I believe, and there's research to support it, that motherhood specifically is like a mutually reciprocal relationship because we are meant to grow in the framework of safe relationships. We're meant to have things like light shined on things that we need to change and we need to shift. And mm-hmm. children have a very powerful way of doing this. And that's part yes. of what's hard about it is it's triggering. It pulls stuff up in us. But if we are really like, I think part of the job is if we're really doing our job, it's to say, what is it in me that mm-hmm. I can shift? And ultimately, mothers and parents will change because of their children into better versions of themselves. And 100%. In turn, this helps our children be better versions of themselves. And so the relationship actually is one where we're both benefiting. We are expanding because yeah. of motherhood rather than our world constricting. And I think it's a really important mindset shift that needs to occur.
100%. I have noticed so much negativity around children, around husbands. I just cannot get behind trashing my husband on social media. And like, not in the way of like, I just feel like if something is happening in a relationship that you are unhappy with, it's not just your side of the story, you know? Right. And I think that that's like, and that's something that I have had to work on so much. It's like, he's also got a mental load that I think does not get acknowledged. And I will never understand because I'm not a man. I'm not a father. I'm not a husband. He's got a different set of priorities that are different from mine. They're not supposed to be identical. They're not supposed to be balanced. In my opinion, I feel like it works better when you have communication about that, not just like, okay, I'm going to worry about what I'm worried about. You worry about what you're worried about. And then we just do it. You know, I think that there is a balance and it's a dance. But it's a balance, but not balanced, not 50-50, not equal. I don't know. Is that true? Doctor in psychology, like this is like my experience. Like, I feel like things have gotten a lot. I feel less resistance in my marriage once we understand each other and we communicate those types of things a little bit more.
Yeah. So this is like a fight. So when I get a troll, this is a fight I will never back down from.
Actually. Do it.
Or just like bring on the
trolls come from us.
Bring on the converse. Like this, the one I don't get a lot, but like one I'll regularly get when I post about the mental load specifically, or about needs, but a lot about the mental load, which is like, cause I'm a big proponent and we have to be able to talk about it. If you can't talk about it, then it's never going to get resolved. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know. I think a lot of partners are probably like fine with what it looks like. It's like, if we're the ones that want to change it,
right,
then we might have to initiate it. So anyway, one of the big pushbacks I get is, well, if I have to talk about it and educate him about it, it's usually him they're referring to, that's more on my mental load. And I get it. And there's it's not untrue.
Yeah.
But I just go back to, you know, listen, we're the ones that want it to shift. If we want it to look different, I don't believe in equal either. I believe it needs to feel fair. It's when it doesn't feel fair that resentment builds. But if we're the ones that want to shift things, then we have to be willing to engage in the conversation. Yes, they have to come to the table. Yes, they have to put in the time and the energy and the effort to try to understand. But what is the alternative? What is the alternative if we don't come to the table to talk about it because we're just ticked off at them for not getting it naturally? So that's one that I'm like, I will happily debate it because the alternative, and I did actually get in a discussion with somebody once and her alternative was you leave. And I think that there are some relationships where maybe it comes to that, that you leave, but I think it's like, I don't have numbers to back this up. So if I say the majority, I don't know if that's true, but I think a lot of people love their partners. They love them.
They're looking at your page because they don't want to leave their partner.
They don't
want to
leave, but they're also, like, this doesn't feel right to me. This doesn't feel fair. I'm like, or I have a good husband, but he doesn't really take initiative as much as I want or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, there is a whole like middle ground where this conversation becomes incredibly important. And worth having and is possible to shift, make shifts in your relationship.
Totally. And I also think that, the alternative is just like leaving. You're going to have baggage with whoever, you know, like the next person that you find, like, is not going to come squeaky clean. You know, they're going to have shit that they have to work through also. Yeah. And you're going to have a new set of complaints. And I don't know.
It just gets me fired up. Cause so like forever, a real like cliche piece of a relationship advice is like, oh, your partner isn't a mind reader. So for some reason, so we accept that, like, oh yeah, of course they're not a mind reader. But then when it comes to this specific topic, we don't apply that same logic. It's like, well, they should just know. You're like, but I thought they weren't supposed to be readers, but here they should just know. And I get some things are obvious. It's like, if you step over a pile right next to the stairs 60 times, didn't you see it, you know, type of thing. So there are obvious things, but I do think, you know, leaving a relationship, you're right, does not come without baggage, especially when you have kids. It doesn't necessarily fix things. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we carry the same stuff and we repeat it in our future relationships when we don't repair it. And so there's just a lot to say on that specific
topic. I know. How much time do you have? We haven't touched on one question that I have.
We haven't done any questions yet.
Oh my gosh. No, it's like so easy. You're so
We can rapid fire these though. These ones
okay.
are.
Yeah, we're getting way too in depth over here. Okay, I would love to know, can you explain burnout and mm-hmm. what that may look like. And then also, like, if somebody doesn't really know if they have it or not, like, I'm sure there's like some very strong indicators, but what are also like some, I heard you talking about this, some like sneaky indications that you have burnout and maybe yeah. aren't like, it's not like setting off that dashboard alarm.
So when you look at the research, so a lot of research on burnout's in the workplace, but it translates pretty well. And so there's three main sort of criteria for burnout. And so I'll just kind of say them in common language. The one is emotional and physical exhaustion. So if you were talking about it, you'd be like, I'm burnt out. Like, this is what you just would say. I'm feeling it, you know, cause we feel that emotional and physical exhaustion. The second is a disconnecting or a numbing out. This is when we start to just kind of like try to escape. So common signs of this are like when you might be in a room with your kids or something, but you just like plop in a corner and pick up your phone, you just scroll and you just get lost in it and you don't feel good. You don't mm-hmm. usually feel good when you're doing it. You're just trying to like get somewhere else, right. get some relief. And then the third is emotional and cognitive dysregulation. And so this is when you are like losing it. You are more mm-hmm. irritable. So yeah. So it shows up as irritability, snapping more at your partner or your kids, mm-hmm. Just feeling like, we talk a lot about mom. I don't, but people talk a lot about mom rage. Maybe I should, but, yeah. This kind of comes out like that. Mm-hmm. And some other common signs are, lacking in creativity. Mm-hmm. This is one that shows up for me because I create content all the time. Like, right. Oh, I yeah. can't come up with anything. No, right. It's the worst, you know? But I think a lot of women can relate to that. Forgetfulness. You're forgetting your words. They'll be like, oh, mom brain. Well, maybe. Maybe yeah. it's full of a lot of things. You're starting to feel burnt out, forgetting mm-hmm. where you put your keys. And yeah. And I think this numbing out behavior is one worth paying attention to. Are you moving through the motions, grabbing that glass of wine at the end of the day, really mindlessly? Are you buying more things or shopping to escape what's going on in your present circumstances? So all that stuff are signs of burnout.
That's so interesting. Yeah. I feel like, last year, this time, like in the summer, I was having like this, it was like, I was about to change, businesses, and it was like, I was just snapping and I did feel like physically and mentally exhausted. And I feel like that, and yet, because I was also like stay at home mom and also work from home mom. Mm-hmm. And also my husband was home. So we were all just together a lot.
Yeah.
And they were around my work environment a lot. And, you know, my husband got to hear about it all the time. And so it was like a lot of stress and also trying to sell our house and like all these things, like yeah. all of this, you know, you just don't, I think, realize that it's like true burnout if you're like totally. At home, you know, so, with your kids.
Oh gosh. Yeah. It happens at home really quickly, yeah. actually. I mean, and so there's a book called Burnout by Emily and Amelia Nagowski. And I also talk about this in my book too, but also the idea of the stress cycle is a big proponent. This is how they say you get stuck in burnout, which is like the stress cycle is basically like how you have a stressful event and mm-hmm. all your system gets activated
yeah.
and then you come down from it. Like an example of that is like a dog. Have you seen like a dog shake when a dog mm-hmm. gets freaked out or something, or another dog lunges at it, kind of stops and like shakes it out. That's releasing the stress. It's mm-hmm. moving that stuff through our bodies. And what happens a lot in humans' lives is that we just go like you're describing, stressful event to stressful event. So mm-hmm. working from home, moving, changing my job, all this stuff is stressful event to stressful event and never actually releasing the stress buildup in our body of like our physiological response. And so when we get stuck in that state, that's a fast track to burnout. And moms kind of have like the makings of getting into that place pretty quickly and easily.
Yeah. And I, you know, one thing for me, like even when I get into that, stressful and I feel like I'm just on edge, I always say like I feel like I just want to crawl out of my skin, like I just yes. want to crawl out of my being. And it's usually when I haven't gotten a workout in, because you just said like the dog shaking and to move through those mm-hmm. feelings. And I feel like, you know, I'm in the fitness industry and my app is designed specifically for moms, and it's real, like we do breathing and we do a vagus nerve stimulation and all of these things are releasing tension. It's yes. not like going to boot camp, you know, it's like, it's neuromuscular reeducation where we're connecting with our body and tapping into what we're actually feeling and being yeah. in our body, you know? And like, that's because that's what I needed, you know, and that's what I need. And so I'm like, maybe my other moms need this too. I don't need to go to the gym, you know, I need to just be able to tap into my body and kind of down regulate that nervous system. And, you know, the breath work, you know, people say, just take a deep breath and relax. It's like, there's so much to that. And you're probably doing it wrong. You know, like a deep breath does not mean your shoulders come up to your ears, you know, it's
that's
like,
my son does it.
That is keeping you in that sympathetic nervous system state where you're hyper activated. And yeah, I always know when I've gone too long without a movement session or like a workout, because I just feel like, oh my gosh, I've been doing everything for everybody. I literally want to crawl out of my skin. It's a weird sensation. It's a weird thing to say. My husband's always like, God, that sounds so awful. And I'm like, I know. Like,
I know what you mean. Yeah, I know it. I know that sensation. Absolutely. Yeah.
So kind of shifting into, I guess, where that burnout would be coming from. Can you explain what the mental load of motherhood. Can you explain, what is the mental load?
So the mental load is, it's a term that has many other names: invisible load, invisible labor, these different things. And, it's essentially the running to-do list. I'll expand on this, that moms, usually it's women really is what research tells us. I have men who are like, I do that. And I believe you, like there are men who carry it. Men have their own, but it's the sort of running list that women tend to carry around in their minds. And there's a couple key factors to the mental load. The first is that the majority of it's invisible. And so the problem with that is that a lot of people don't notice it. It just gets done, or it gets taken care of, or we're worrying about it, like worry work and things like that are all part of it. And then also it makes it really hard to explain to our partners, because they're like, I don't understand. Just like make a list or something. Right. So,
right.
And then the other is that it's ongoing. And so it doesn't really have an end point, which is the difficult part, especially stuff around the home. It's like, once you finish laundry, you just start laundry again. Or once you make dinner, you wake up the next day and you got to come up with another idea. So it's ongoing. And then the last is, and this is one of the most important pieces, is that it takes up, I call it cognitive real estate. It just basically takes up space in our brains, which crowds out, which is draining, first of all, to carry it. And then it crowds out other things. And so maybe it crowds out creativity. Maybe it crowds out, like, you know, being in a sexy state of mind type of thing, but it takes up a lot of space, and it to occupy space other things could fit into.
Yeah. I feel like that kind of segues right into resentment in marriage, when you have this like very heavy, but mental load. It's kind of like, that's a great, I've never heard it described that way, is where it crowds out everything else. And for me, that like invisible load looks like, I know that we're going to need to buy more pants for our older kid, because she's growing, and we don't have some, you know, hand-me-downs, and we don't have, you know, she just has like two pairs of pants, and we're also going to need to go buy shoes. And I've also got to make sure that the card is expiring. And so I need to make sure that all of our bills are updated with that new card. It's like all those weird little things that my husband is definitely 1,000% not thinking about. It does not take up space in his mind, but I'm becoming more aware that there's a different mental load that I do not think about. Like when we travel cross country, I'm always worried about our safety, you know, but my husband is hyper vigilant about gas stations and about getting in and out of transitional spaces and making sure that all the luggage is secure and that the trailer is attached to the car correctly and the pin is in there. And like all the things, I just get in the car with my kids, you know, and he's checking the brake lights and doing this and doing that and all these things, you know. And it's like, that's not part of my mental load. It's extremely important, you know, for our safety. And I think that empowering moms with the information that you give, and I think you do it I don't ever get the feeling of like, I don't know, like how we were just talking about how motherhood has been like kids that drain us and suck all the energy out of us, and they're this like burden. And also our husbands are terrible and they're, you know, stupid and like all these things, you know. It's like, I've never gotten that vibe from your page. I think it's all really helpful information, but that is a trend out there, you know, like minimizing our husbands and what they're going through just to, I don't know, advance like the awareness of what moms are going through, which I think is amazing, because I never talked to my mom about any of this. You know, I had no idea other moms were going through this.
I know. I appreciate you saying that because I am very conscious of how I present information. I'm sure my account would be bigger if I just lean into complaining about these things, but I just won't do it because I just don't think it's helpful. No, do not compromise.
Yeah, it's you are not amazing.
Helpful.
No.
But I just think like we can elevate and amplify women's perspective without stomping on our partners because
yes, exactly.
It takes two.
Yes.
And like, for example, I think about the, you know, we're, it's an ongoing thing in my relationship, the mental load stuff. I think it's part of why I can like speak to it. My husband mm-hmm. travels yeah. almost every week. And so the reality is that most of it's on me just because of logistical circumstances of my mm-hmm. life. So, but it's an ongoing thing. But I think, you know.
Hey, sister, I'm taking a moment to share about my favorite barefoot shoes brand by Feelgrounds. Our feet are our foundation. And if that foundation isn't strong, it can have a trickle effect up to our knees, hips, and you guessed it, your pelvic floor. Studies show that by simply switching your foot's environment to a barefoot shoe, it can lead to an increase of muscle strength in the feet up to 60% with no additional foot-focused exercises. I love Feelgrounds because they have a thin sole to help you feel the ground, zero drop to reduce knee and hip pain, a wide toe box to foster toe splay, and it's super flexible to enable full range of motion for your feet. Use the link in the show notes to get your pair of Feelgrounds to improve your foundation. Now, let's get back to the show.
So early on in my relationship, especially with our daughter when she was first born, I mean, her temperament, and I don't even know looking back if it was a difficult temperament, but for me, it was not what I expected. So it felt mm-hmm. difficult. Mm-hmm. And, he got relocated to California, which is where we live now. I didn't meet up with him until she was 10 months old. So 2 months to 10 months, I kind of did the majority of it on my own. And,
My gosh.
Right. It's my part of my early entry to motherhood story. I mean, he was in and out and we would fly out cross country,
right.
But, and part of what happened, and I think it would have happened no matter what, but part of what happened is I was like taking charge of everything. Cause I had to,
of
but
course.
Then also I was like, you don't know what you're doing. Like, you don't know how to handle our very scary baby. Like, you don't yes. know how to change her diaper the right way or like,
right.
And this is just a motherhood thing. But I mean, I think back to even before we had kids and there were certain things that I just took on mm-hmm. without conversation. Like originally mm-hmm. I was like, I'll do the shopping and I'll make dinner and I'll clean the kitchen. Let me take care of you. Like all out of love. Mm-hmm. Right. So that was out of love. The stuff with our daughter was out of like, you don't know, I know, it was more maternal gatekeeping. Mm-hmm. But this started us down a path, right? Mm-hmm. Where like, where I was the owner of the things and he got to like step in and make guest appearances. And we had to undo a lot of this. In some areas, it still needs a little bit of work, but we've done a lot of work around these things. And I think that, you know, is it my fault? No, but did I play a part? For sure. For sure, I played a part. And I think like, you told a story in the beginning where you're like, he doesn't do the dishes like how I want him to, and he soaks them too long and he doesn't. So I do them. And I'm like, well, so you took, you know, and we do this all the time and it's not a bad thing if we're okay mm-hmm. with it. But we do stuff where we're impatient or we don't like how they do it or we have our own standards. And so we take it on and it piles more on us. And right. so the mental load is something that men need to step into with a desire to have more ownership and to pay attention. Mm-hmm. But also we need to be aware of how we fire them from certain tasks.
Yeah. Like don't make them feel like a guest in your house. You know, like you don't touch anything. Don't move anything. That was a big thing for me too.
Or even just how we perpetuate, carrying more things by just mm-hmm. kind of crowding some things out. And, so my whole point in saying that is like, there's two sides to these conversations. There's two areas that can be kind of worked on when you're trying mm-hmm. to make changes. It's not just like men stink and women are amazing, even though right. we're amazing and some men do stink, but that's usually not all the story. It's not the complete story.
Totally. So that kind of like, that is how that resentment can build up in your marriage, is that you take on all this and there's mm-hmm. no conversation about it. There's no communication about these mm-hmm. things. You just kind of take over, which I feel like a lot of moms do. Mm-hmm. And then our husbands don't do it right. So then we tell them not to do it. Then we're mad that they don't do it. It's like this weird cycle. So you definitely like undoing, just having a conversation, I guess. Right.
It's a lot of things. So, I talk about, when I talk about the mental load, so I have a course on it, and actually my second book is going to be on the mental load, but I talk about it like the within and between. So there's work within, which is like, if you make changes personally, mm-hmm. what changes do you make? And that's things like, am I taking stuff on without talking about it? Am I doing things that are sabotaging my partner's involvement, mm-hmm. Like micromanaging, taking things really personally, getting impatient and doing it ourselves, things like mm-hmm. that. So that's stuff that you can change as the individual. So I think that's one area of intervention. What can I shift in order to like make more space for my partner to come mm-hmm. to the table? Or to make things more visible that previously had been invisible, like mm-hmm. just doing things that is like a secret ninja in the night that no one sees, like start putting definition around that stuff. And then the others between, and then that's the conversation. That's like, what do we need to hash out together mm-hmm. to, get on the same page and to have a distribution of things that feels more fair. And I think another part of the conversation that I don't see talked about enough that I try to talk about a lot is sometimes what we need is our partner to do more, like do it, see it, take care of it. Don't make me tell you. I think that's a big frustration point for women too, is I still have to like spell it out for them. Yeah. I shouldn't have to do that. But the other piece is sometimes what we really need is encouragement and appreciation.
I knew you were going to say that. Like, I saw your reel on this and I was, oh my gosh, yes. You can carry so much if it's acknowledged and if you're appreciated and if you feel adored in that feeling in what you're doing.
I love taking care of my family. It brings me a lot of happiness. And I'm not saying that's for everyone, but for me, but if I feel taken advantage of or taken mm-hmm. for granted, then I resent it.
Yes. It's a very fine line. You know, it's like mom does a lot. And I think that just having, you know, and your kids don't, I feel like your kids just don't know how much you do until they become parents, until they're out of the house, you know, but your husband mm-hmm. knows how mm-hmm. much is happening. Mm-hmm. And it can make such a world of difference. And if your husband's like, you know, you're doing such a good job. Thank you for dinner. Thank you for doing this. You know, it's like those little things, you're like, ooh, that was a little boost. And you feel, for me, instantly more attracted. There is more space in your mind for intimacy. You know, it's like those little shifts. It's those little shifts.
It's true. I recently put up this kind of goes into one of your questions. I put up a question box and was like, how do you wish your partner pursued you? Because I like have this, I don't know why I get like stuck on these things where I'm like, it's so simple what people want in their relationships. Yeah. A lot of times it's just these little things that we really want from our partners. But when we don't get them, all of a sudden it starts to kind of like escalate. We don't get this. Then we start to see them in a really negative light. And then we start to see everything bad. And then we build resentment and then disconnection. Then we don't have sex. And then it like snowballs, but it's usually little things. And I got a ton of responses and they were all like very similar. Which is this, which is like partners want, this is, if you want to know what women want,
listen up.
Women want to be pursued by like being taken out on a date. It's so simple. It's like, we want our partners to want to spend time with us and to initiate that time with us. And I think part of it is especially because so much of our world is about caring for everyone else, that we're like, no, who's watching out for us? So if our partners step in and plan a date and say, I really want to spend some time with you, that is like aphrodisiac city. Yeah. So do that. The other is the other one I already said, which is expressions of appreciation and acknowledgement. And that's free and it's quick. You don't get break a sweat doing it. It's like, it's the simplest thing to give to our partners. And like, those were the two, there were others, but those were the two most common responses. Mm-hmm. And I just don't, it's so stinking simple.
I know. And I think also like the love languages play into this too. Mm-hmm. And like me and my husband are learning about that too. In the last 5 years, it's like, he thinks that initiating sex basically is him showing that he loves me, you know, but that's how And this is not just like, that's the only way. We've been right. learning about each other. We've been together since we were 15 years old. So I just turned 30 this year. And so there's been a lot of growing up and learning about ourselves and each other in that 15 years of being together. But you know, and for me, I'm like, I just want you to hug me and kiss me without expecting that we have to go into the bedroom. And not like every time, but I'm also learning about hormonal changes in my body for our phases. You know, like some weeks I'm like, all right, let's go in the bathroom, you know, for 3 minutes while the kids are watching a show. And then other days I'm like, don't touch me, you know. I'm like, but it's not him, and it's almost not even me, it's hormones that are changing. And like, but women aren't given those tools, and then it just comes off as offensive to husbands. Totally. And husbands don't know about it either. And so it's like, once you learn to kind of like learn each other's love languages, learn what makes each other tick, learn what makes each other triggered, and then also the hormonal changes, you know, I think that's a big one. And I feel like it's not one that we didn't learn about that in school. We learned about our period and that it's awful, and that's, and our cycle has been demonized in that way. And I think that if men had more information about the female hormonal cycles and phases, and women had that same information, everything would kind of flow a little bit easier, in my opinion.
I'm glad you said that one, because I was like, I'm missing one. The third was non-sexual touch. So like touch that doesn't actually lead to anything. Mm-hmm. And I know that to be true even for myself. It's like, if I'm in the kitchen and my husband comes up and like wraps his arms around me, immediately it's like, I'm filled up. And so it's such
like I'm doing something. Yeah. Right now,
like
it, you know,
feels good to be like, he just had to touch me in that moment, but we weren't going to go have sex. Right. It was just this. And I think just to speak really fast to love languages, because I feel like people need to hear this sometimes. It's more normal for you and your partner to have different love languages than it is to have the same. And so, part of our job as partners, if we're doing our job well, is to really become an expert in our partner's love language. But we tend to love people like we like to be loved. Mm-hmm. And so we miss each other so often in really honoring and like meeting each other's needs in the ways that we need them met. And so if you're like, oh, we have different ones, it's so hard. It's like, you're in the majority, but just work to get out of your comfort zone. It is uncomfortable to meet someone's needs in the ways that they like them met, but that's really what makes a huge difference in your relationship.
In our relationship with our partner, is our relationship with our partners and ourselves, in air quotes, more important than our relationship with our children? Or is there a hierarchy? I feel like when I first became a mom, it was all about my baby all the time. And I don't think that served me or my husband or my child well. And it's definitely changed over time, but I would love to get your take on this.
For
any moms that are in that.
Two things about me. I try not to complain on social media. And number two, I have a really hard time with like hard and fast answers, where it's like, I live in the gray. So like this question, I really love this question, but I wouldn't say there's a direct hierarchy, because it's just like you said, there are times in our lives when certain relationships are going to take priority. So I have a book, Love Your Kids Without Losing Yourself. Well, right when you become a mom, it's expected and normal that you're going to lose yourself and your kids, because your infant needs you for everything. So I can't say there's a hard and fast hierarchy, because if there were, let's say when your baby's first born and I'm like, your relationship's number one, you're like neglecting your baby.
Right. Yeah. Right? So can you imagine?
Like, no, I have this hierarchy. I think that what is really important to understand is that these relationships build off of each other, and they all impact each other. And so if you are really struggling with your relationship with yourself and you are self-sacrificing for the preservation of everybody else, ultimately you're going to end up becoming really bitter and resentful. And then these relationships will start to suffer. So you neglect yourself, your partnership, and your relationship with your kids will eventually suffer. You neglect your partnership, and you are like all about the kids, and like your world is really child centric, I think then over time, there's going to be a disconnection that starts small that will continue to grow over time in your relationship with your partner. And then ultimately, if that relationship falls apart, it affects your children, it affects your, so they are all, I imagine them just like woven together, really impacting each other. And I think this is really, you know, we're sort of coming full circle, which is kind of cool for this conversation, but I started my book, and a premise of all our relationship courses is this idea that our relationships regularly will come out of balance, will fall out of balance. And there's two follow-up points, which is that they're going to fall out of balance. That's normal. Don't beat yourself up over it. And then the second is, but they don't auto-correct. They're not going to just spontaneously repair. We know that. Like, we know that instinctually with our children, especially. It's like when we feel the time I feel like it's really powerful is when we have a baby, we have a child, and then we're pregnant with number two. And we're like so worried that having number two is going to create disconnection with number one. And so when that inevitably happens, because it does, it happens, we actively carve out time for number one. We do something about it, which is the third point, is that if we are going to fall out of balance, if they're not going to autocorrect, then we have to intentionally manage our relationships. And so we are really empowered in that way. And I think that's really what you want to take into these three really core, there's all sorts of other relationships in our lives, but these are three really core relationships that we just got to keep tabs on, right? It's like sometimes they're going to be real child heavy and that's fine, but like then kind of pull back and recalibrate a little bit, turn some of the dials. Sometimes when you've like backburnered for a long time and you're like, "Ooh, I'm starting to get a little bit burnt out. I'm starting to feel resentful. It's time for me to shuffle around where I am investing in my relationships." And I do think though, it's the self, I mean, easily the self is lost for moms and women. But I think partnership is in our generation is sacrificed a lot. Especially the millennial generation research has shown that like parenthood is like ranked so much higher in terms of importance than partnership. But really partnership provides a safe framework and sense of security for our children. And so don't forget about that one. Don't forget about touching base with your partner regularly and turning those dials. So that's my long answer.
No, it's, I think like, honestly, I think that that's the most important question that we asked was, you know, looking at those three relationships. And I love the cover of your book because I feel that is such a visual representation of that last question. It's like all of these, it's a Venn diagram. All three of them, you have two. But really we could think about them as three because they all intersect and they all affect each other, but they are all separate and they're all important and they're not higher than one another. They're all equal, you know, in a sense. And I think that something that you're talking about, the kind of the whole feeling of your answer was that I think for so long we have talked about it's all about finding balance. And I think that that has just been so detrimental to moms, you know, because you're like, what the fuck is wrong with me? I cannot balance my shit. You know, all these moms are out there doing it and I can't do it. I wasn't made for motherhood. I wasn't made to do this.
Something's wrong with me.
Something's wrong with me. And I think that, you know, and I've heard this from a couple of different psychologists and people talk about this type of work. In terms of balance, it's not about showing up. It's not about 50-50. And I think that's so important to really think about in your, like, even in my own marriage, we have made up 100% together somehow. If my husband has 20% to give, I know that I need to put in 80% of our 100 for that season. And seasons will always do what they've always done. They're going to change. You know, when I only have 30% to give, my husband is going to make up the difference because life is hard and it's going to keep being hard. And if you know that your marriage is worth it and you know that you want to keep doing it with this person, you're not going to be like, oh, well, he's only got 20. I'm only putting in my 50. And he's just, you know, he's such a piece of shit. He's not doing anything. He's so lazy. I need to tell him. But like, that's your guy. You know, that's the other half of your partnership. And it's really about like grabbing them by the arm and being like, it's okay. I've got you. We're going together, you know? And it's, I think that balance is not, it's like such a small percentage of what your time together will be. it's almost never going to be balanced. It's almost never going to be 50-50.
No, nothing in life really is ever. Yeah. Like, nothing ever really in life gets to a balanced place and stays there forever. Mm-hmm. So if you like imagine like, oh, we reach our cruising altitude, we don't stay there forever because inevitably life's going to throw some turbulence our way. And so we just, it's rather than seeking balance, we have to get good at balancing. It's a practice. It's checking in, whether you're checking in with our partner or our children or ourselves. And it's seeing, what do we need? Do we need more time together? Do I need more time alone? Do I need to take care of this? What do my children need? It's regularly checking in on these relationships and making small, manageable adjustments time and time again. And that prevents these massive disconnects from resulting, which just leads into vulnerabilities in our relationships, whether it's our kids, our partner, or ourselves. All of these things, it's the same principles that apply.
I got a bunch of questions for my community. I said that I was having you on, and I really wanted just to, because there's a couple of these that kind of wrap right into where this conversation went. Somebody from my community said, I asked them, what are you struggling most with in your marriage or in motherhood right now? And I had somebody write in, my last baby, we are a couple, who are we as a couple when we don't have a baby and a toddler? I've forgotten. Are we the same people that met 14 years ago and 4 kids ago? No. Mm-hmm. Who are we then? Mm-hmm. And I feel like that exactly kind of said that's exactly what I'm talking about.
It's like, you can take that same story and even put it like, can put it on different relationships. So if you put it on the mom, the story would be her children leave. She's an empty nester and she looks at herself and she's like, who am I when I'm not a mom? Who are we when we're not parents? Who are we? So part of how this happens is that we're not regular. So, I mean, I recommend for couples that you have regular relationship meetings. It's not a new concept. A lot of people recommend this, but we have a course actually for couples that gives a framework, like what do you actually do at the meetings, and then a model of relationships, because you have to manage your relationship. But what the heck is a relationship? So we give you a model of relationships. And part of why it's important to have these regular check-ins with your partner is the number one thing you can do to protect your relationship is to schedule. You schedule it, because then it's not the woman managing this. You schedule it on a calendar. You regularly check in with each other. How are we doing? Because we fall out of the know with each other. Knowing is never ending. We change every single day. We have new experiences. You know, we check in on how we're seeing each other, if resentment is developing, on how we're doing spending time together, what our sex life is like. You do a check-in, stay connected, because this helps you prevent that experience of feeling like we don't even know each other. We've been two ships crossing in the night for 4 children, right? Which a lot of people exist that way. It's mm-hmm. the same with our relationship with ourselves. It's what I teach in my book, which is I give a model of relationships. How do you manage your relationship with yourself? We don't even think that we have a relationship with ourselves. Mm-hmm. How do you check in, tune the dials in easy, manageable ways? And so this is, this couple is not too far gone. What they need to start doing is setting some time to just do what I'm saying, sit down, have a meeting, check in with each other. This is not a complain fest. This is a time that's 20 minutes or less. It's a happy time together. You end with something positive, an expression of appreciation, and a physical, whatever, a hug or a kiss or something. And you schedule the next one and start getting to know each other all over again.
Amazing. That is like so helpful. It's such a tangible way to start, you know, moving the dials, really start tipping the scale in a positive direction. Okay, here's another one. She's got teenage boys. The husband threatens you to pick your child or himself. And I guess finding a middle ground is hard right now. So I guess mom is focusing more on the boys, and he feels, I don't know, like he wants her to choose him, probably feeling neglected in some way.
Yeah. It's funny. I think this might be more common than it gets really like any like airtime, which is mm-hmm. that a lot of times our husbands might feel neglected when the kids come along. And so I have a friend who's in the parenting advice space, and this isn't a new concept, but she says it, so I'll give her credit. Her name's Myla. And she's joyful parents, but she always says, what's the need behind the behavior? Mm-hmm. And it applies to all of our relationships, really. And so I would ask that of her husband. So he's kind of threatening. And so what's the need that he has that's going unmet? Because that can allow us to step into a place of more empathy and compassion versus being like irritated by it. Because it's easy to be irritated by these things.
Yeah.
Just be like, get your crap together. What's your problem? But and I would guess that he's just feeling like he wants to be wanted. He wants to be cared for. He wants to be the thing that she's thinking about and paying mm-hmm. attention to. And he's feeling neglected. And I'm sure she's like pouring it around for everybody and is probably feeling spread thin. But if for a moment she could step in and say to him something like, I hear you. What do you need from me? Like, I'm sorry. If you can just for a moment kind of reach, and this is what relationships require, is one person to be a bit more humble sometimes, mm-hmm. which people don't like to hear that either, but it's true. Mm-hmm. And it would sound just like that, you know, okay, I hear that you're upset and you're feeling like you have to threaten me to choose. You must be really feeling desperate for something. Like, tell me what it is. I love you.
Yeah.
Let me try to give it to you. Mm-hmm. And see, let him have some space to vocalize what's going on. Mm-hmm.
I think that is like the key. And I feel like in the, you know, not to say that she's not feeling, you know, maybe like she doesn't want to give her attention to him because of maybe how he's acting or whatever. But, you know, like you said, it takes somebody to be like, okay, I'm going to drop the wall and because it's worth it. In the end, it's worth it. It's worth your marriage to think, okay, this is the one person. It's not a weakness. You know, it's not a weakness to be soft and to be, to be curious about, it's very hard. It's exactly. It's not a weakness at all. It's actually the bigger thing and the harder thing to do. But it also allows them to be like, okay, validated in their feelings and that you see them, which I think, you know, that's what we want as wives and women and mothers, is to be validated in our experience and also be appreciated. And, you know, I think that it, you know, it's not the whole story.
Hey sister, let's talk about skincare that really works and doesn't leave you feeling like you've got buyer's remorse. I'm talking about Dime Beauty. These products are made from clean ingredients, are vegan, cruelty-free, and contain no harsh chemicals. Dime products are also ranked between a 1 and a 3 on the EWG toxicity scale. As I'm sure you already know or have heard, fragrances can be harmful to the skin and clog your pores, so of course Dime Beauty products are fragrance-free, which I totally appreciate. My favorites are the mascara, Hyper Glow Vitamin C Serum, and the TBT Serum. It's honestly the best clean mascara I've ever used, and trust me, I've tried them all. Dime Beauty is a budget-friendly, vegan, and cruelty-free option for fantastic skincare. Their packaging is glass, making them eco-friendly, and they offer returns up to 60 days, as well as free shipping on US orders over $49, and you can use my code TRUELOVE20 at checkout to save 20% on everything, including bundles. That's code TRUELOVE20 at checkout. TRUELOVE20 at checkout. Now, let's get back to the show.
Okay, so this mom reached out. I wish we could have dates, but we don't trust anyone with our kids, so it's a struggle. This is personally us too. We don't leave our kids with anybody, so this person probably knows my kind of stance on like leaving with people, so that's probably why she wanted to know, because that's a question that I would ask too.
I think this one's really hard. I know I have friends who are like this too. And it's like, what's the workaround? The workaround is creativity. It's like, okay, when the kid, maybe we institute an earlier bedtime, then like as our kids get older, we still try to hold that the earlier bedtime, or they do, you go to your bed at this time and then you listen to an audiobook and then, you know, then you go to bed. So you have a little bit more time at night. Cause I know like our kids are getting older and we're having less and less window of time together in the evenings, cause they're going to bed later. Mm-hmm. And so it might be something like that, getting creative with dates at home.
Yeah.
We do family dates and I actually have a lot of fun doing that.
I love that too.
I love family dates. They're one of my favorites. So you can do things like that. I think, you know, having another thing that can be fun is having, if you have a couple friend who has children around the same age and you all hang out together and the kids kind of like
entertain each other. Yeah.
And you get, it's not one-on-one time with your partner, but you get to feel a different type of connection, which is really nice. And you can feel like a, an us ship, sort of like us for, you know, not versus them, but like, you know,
I get that.
I think that's a really good thing to do. But it's really, then it just becomes about being creative. And I guess, like, you know, maybe you'll never feel comfortable leaving with them with somebody, but also like just keeping, an eye out or something, or relationships that might come into your life that provide safe spaces. Like, we don't do sleepovers except for with one other family. Cause it's like, that's, they don't have anybody stopping by. There's like, and I think that there's like, those are really like amazing gifts to have people in your life that you can trust. And so continuing to kind of just check in on your stance on it and who's in your life and who feels safe and when you feel safe, or maybe you never will, but then that's just creativity.
Yeah. For us, that looks like making each other, we'll kind of switch on and off of like who makes each other coffee in the morning, and we'll sit together and do that. Or like we read the Daily Stoic together every morning. And the kids will be playing, and it's like, it's finding those little pockets of time. And for us, it's like, we don't feel comfortable leaving our kids with anybody, and we don't have to, you know, like, I know that that's not the situation for everybody, but I'm totally virtual. And my husband now works out of the house, but I can be with them, you know, the whole time. And that provides me a better mental state. For it doesn't make sense for me to go leave them with somebody, because it gives me anxiety and I will not be able to relax on that date. Mostly because my kids can't talk yet. You know, it's like, they're not comfortable. They can talk, you know, they talk to us, but it's like, I don't know how comfortable they would be coming forward with something. And that for me is not worth the risk at this moment. Not that we're gonna, you know, you're not allowed to be with alone or like whatever with somebody when you're a teenager, at our house or like whatever. But I think that right now it makes more sense for us to just find those pockets of time at home. Even if like, cause our kids sleep with us too. We bed share with both of our kids. So it's like, my husband is not missing out on anything. The bed is not the only place you can find intimacy. And I think that's like also mind blowing for some people. It's like, you don't, it's just like you said, it's about getting creative and making other, it's like anywhere that you can find those special places, you know, and moments together.
I think like what you added is so smart. And like, I remember being at this marriage conference once, and this guy got up, and he's probably in his 70s, and he's like, every day for our entire marriage, when we had kids, at this time to this time, we went in this room together and we sat and we like had a cup of coffee or tea, and the kids knew, do not like, this is our catch up time. And I think you can build in rhythms like that into your family. And I still think you can pursue your partner, even if you don't go on dates.
Yeah.
Little notes. You can make each other coffee. You can be like, let's listen to this podcast together and talk about it later. Like, there's all sorts of things that you can do to promote connection without leaving your kids.
Totally. Let me see if there's any other ones that go into, just one last question maybe. I don't know if this is inside your wheelhouse, but confidence and enjoyment in the bedroom. She's currently 3 months postpartum. I feel like that kind of touches on what I mentioned at the very beginning of like your body being, not in, I think in mom's mind, like a sexual, like a source of sensuality, especially 3 months postpartum. Like, your body has gone through so much, but you know, your husband still sees you as that, because that you are who you've always been to him, I think. So I don't know if you have advice here.
I think that our confidence in our own body is like one of the biggest things that affects our like being in the mood, our desire. So if we are really critical about our bodies or insecure about things, it really shuts down desire. So it's like, I mean, one of the most common, I don't talk about sex as much on my account as I used to. Maybe I'll come back to it sometime. I like talking about it. But I always get like, I'm not in the mood. And of course there's so many factors, hormones and all sorts of things. Mental load is actually quite a big one, but I do think, body confidence is really, really, really big. And, I think I'm a big believer in, we are all sexual beings, and it's our responsibility to develop almost like in our sexual relationship with ourselves. And I'm not saying like touch yourself. I'm not necessarily saying that, but I'm saying we have like a sexuality to us. We have a sexual right. power. We have that we need to step into and take ownership of. And I think a lot of times in our relationships, we sort of like defer. It's not always like this. I hear from so many women who have the higher desire. So if that's you, please know that's very normal. But I think there's a common theme that comes up, which is like we defer to our partners. Like we have sex for them. And this is just giving our power away, our sexual power away. And so I think part of like coming back into ourselves, especially after having kids, is getting in touch with our sexual power. So what does that look like? That might mean like talking to your body in a way that feels disingenuous at first. So if you're like, you know, what's my stomach? Like, look at these stretch marks. Where did these come from? It might mean like honoring them, loving them, talking to them kindly, starting to look at your body. My friend was like, she's so awesome. She's like, once a month, I stand in front of the mirror and I like put body oil all over me and I rub my body and I just tell it how awesome it is. And I was like,
yes,
great idea. I mean, I love it's that. Like, it's not for everybody, but
I feel like it should be.
Like, there's something to coming back into ourselves. Like, look at me. I am a sexual woman. I am a sexual being. I have desires. There's things I like. Like, what do I like? Like, really starting to tune into some of that stuff. Owning your sexuality and really loving on your body and speaking to it kindly are like some ways to get started, because body confidence is such a downer when it comes to sex. And it's like, what? I mean, I'm looking out the window at our daughter and it's like, I cannot tell you how many body hangup issues I have had to get over because I have a little girl. And
exactly.
Like, I don't want her to have those. And so there's the benefits of working on this relationship you have with your body are they are exponential. They multiply.
And you know, somebody wanted to put a baby in you. So mama still got it. Still. Yeah.
Yeah. Mama, I mean, my husband never, I've been at like my best, my worst. He still wants it. I don't know. Yeah. So
there's something to that. Just own it, mama. Let's go. And I think that everybody after this episode is going to go buy some body oil and start greasing it up in front of the mirror and talking nice to yourself. And I just, you know, and I think that when we kind of block off that sexual energy, it kind of shuts down other things too, like our creativity. And, you know, and she also said enjoyment in the bedroom. And I don't know if it's because it's painful. You know, I think this is another thing that isn't really talked about. And it's like, and that our husbands probably don't realize, like after my C-section, sex was excruciatingly painful. And I was like, what is wrong with me? I didn't even deliver vaginally. I had no idea what was happening. Yeah. But I also feel like when we have this painful experience, you know, we brace for that pain and we're also like white knuckling our life, you know, like wanting to be in control of all these things. And that translates into tension in our pelvic floor, which again is going to create more pain. It's going to shut down that sexuality energy and shut down the creativity and all these things. So it's like, it's all very related to each other. And, just like you said, it's so multifaceted, all of the factors that could be playing into, I'm not in the mood, or I don't want to do it, or whatever. And it's just about really like tuning into your body and communicating with your partner. So we touched on so many things.
Have fun writing the show notes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I know. That was so much fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh. It's incredible. Can you tell everybody where they can find you? Yeah. What are you currently, do you see people one-on-one? Not right now. Yeah. Cause you're so busy traveling, going on Good Morning America. So.
No, that's not why actually.
Writing books and courses
I work, so I only work 2 days a week, and during the school year, I might work three because I homeschool the kids. And, it's like,
of course you do. Oh my gosh. You do it all.
It's a lot of things. And so I've had to like, what can I put aside? So someday maybe I'll start seeing clients again, or doing coaching or groups or something, things like that. Yeah. So right now But right now, so you can find me on Instagram, Dr. Morgan, well, Dr. Morgan Cutlip. It's all one word, no period. And then my book is really what I'm hoping that your listeners will pre-order. It's,
yes.
It covers, like, it talks about body image. It covers a whole lot of stuff that we talked about today, but in a really organized framework. It's called Love Your Kids Without Losing Yourself, 5 Steps to Banish Guilt and Beat Burnout When You Already Have Too Much to Do. It's a really long subtitle, but I felt it was necessary.
Like,
and
it.
It's a system for how you care for yourself as a mom. It's not like a regular laundry list of strategies, and you can find that book anywhere you buy books, but when you pre-order, you get all these really cool incentives. Like, you can listen to the first couple chapters immediately on audio. My kids are making faces at me.
My husband was just doing that.
They're like, they just ran away. And you can get those gifts at drmorgancutlip.com/book. Those are the main things. You can find everything on my website. So I hope you guys check it out. I'm just like so passionate about this book. I really know it's going to help moms, and just trying to get it in front of as many moms as possible, because I just,
Absolutely. We're struggling.
Yeah.
I pre-ordered the book too. So as soon as I get it in, I'll share about it also. And put everything in the show notes. You also do a podcast with your dad, right?
We did. So you can still listen to the episode.
I was listening to some. Yeah. It's so fun that you do that with your dad.
So it's turn of events. We went to start it up again and he's like, I don't think I want to do it. And I'm like, what? So I'm trying to decide if I'm going to do what I'm going to do. If I'm going to do,
I was just going to say, do you have your own podcast?
But I'm considering doing one. It's a lot of work, as you know. And so I'm checking in with my bandwidth, because I got to write another book. So
yes, you do. Help us all figure it out.
I'm going to help write the mental load book.
Yes, you do. So, yeah. Morgan, thank you so much. You are just a beam of light and a pleasure to talk to you and a wealth of knowledge. Thank you so much. I'm going to put all that info in the show notes, and thank you so much again.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Daily Momship Podcast. If you did, be sure to subscribe. Also, before you go, I would love you forever if you could rate and review this podcast, share with a mom friend or on social media, and be sure to tag me at Move With True Love and at Daily Momship Pod on Instagram. Again, thank you so much for listening, and I will see you soon.